a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
We will call the Senate Local Government Committee to order, and Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Gillespie, Klocek,
here.
Miles,
here.
Schmidt,
here.
Thiessen,
here.
Bradford,
here.
Gant,
here.
Mr. Chair, there's a quorum.
We have a quorum present. Senator Gillespie let me know that she wasn't going to be able to make it today. Well, welcome to Senate Local Government. We have a few bills already, so I figured we'd get started. We don't have many more right in the pipeline, but I'm sure they'll be down the pipeline. So we'll get started. First off, I want to introduce our pages. We have Dakota Marshall from Timberlake, and we have Hillary Roth from Pierre. So welcome. Let's get started. First up, we'll take Senate Bill 13, Revise Certain Provisions Concerning Petitions and Elections.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Chris Nelson, Secretary of State. Senate Bill 13 comes to you from the State Board of Elections, and as you know, the State Board is a bipartisan board that meets periodically. They have a number of functions, one of which is to recommend legislative changes. This bill, a lot of sections, and as you can tell, it contains just a lot of smaller type changes to various areas of the election code. And these are areas that, as we've worked with election law and as our local county auditors have worked with it over the past year, have found some things that need to be clarified and cleaned up. I'm going to mention just a couple of the more significant areas. Sections 1, 9, and 10 all relate to the recent court case that we had dealing with the smoking ban petition. And as you know, there were some questions there about, you know, the definition of a complete notarization on the petitions and the definition of inactive voter, and can an inactive voter sign a petition or not. And so in sections 1, 9, and 10, we have worked on that language. And just to give you an example, section 1, line 13, the current law says, you know, the verification on that petition should be witnessed by a notary public commissioned in South Dakota. Well, one of the attorneys attempted to argue, well, it might say the notary just has to witness it, but it doesn't say the notary actually has to notarize it. Well, okay, fine. We will clarify that to make sure that, yes, in fact, that means you actually have to notarize it also. And so those are some of the kinds of changes that we're making in that particular area. The second area that I'd look at, sections 11, 14, 15, and 18. 11, 14, 15, and 18 deal with a new federal requirement called the Military and Overseas Voter Empowerment Act, recently passed federal law, and the intention of that law is to make it easier for overseas and military voters to vote absentee. And a couple of the things that they are requiring us to do, first of all, is lengthen the amount of time that we make absentee ballots available. Right now, they're available 42 days before the election. That federal law is going to require us to expand that to 45 days. They feel that's the minimum amount of transit time to get a ballot overseas and get it back. And so you'll see that in here. The second thing that federal law requires us to do is to allow an absentee voter to track their absentee application and ballot electronically. And so we are, in, as we speak, setting up a software system so that anybody that votes absentee will be able to go onto our website and see the date their application arrived at the auditor's office, the date their ballot was mailed out to them, and the date their ballot comes back to the auditor, giving the voter the ability to track that whole process and know where things are at. You'll see some language in here that facilitates that. And then the third and largest component of that federal requirement is that we have to make absentee ballots available electronically to those military and folks overseas. And so we are developing that software system again as we speak, and there's some language in here that facilitates the availability of that ballot electronically. The last thing that I'd point out are a couple more things. Sections 16, 17, and 19 through 21 deal with the absentee voting process, not necessarily the process, but the counting process. And you'll think back to 2008, they had a interesting statewide recount in Minnesota. And a lot of the issues in that recount revolved around uncountable absentee ballots. And that got me to looking at our particular laws in that area in South Dakota. And so these changes are reflected, I think, to make sure that if we ever get in that kind of situation, that we've got those handled as well as we can. Now, having said that, I've asked our county auditors, you know, how many uncounted absentee ballots do we have in South Dakota? Because Minnesota, they had thousands. And our auditor said, well, we, you know, maybe one or two, maybe. I mean, it's just, it's not a big deal here. But in those cases where they do have an uncounted one, we want to make sure that they're handled as best as possible. Section 23 clarifies the authority of a recount board. What exactly can they recount, particularly if there are uncounted absentee ballots or uncounted provisional ballots? Do they or don't they have the authority to look at those? And this specifically says they do have the authority to look at those. The rest of the changes here, as you look through, you're going to find they're basically cleanup type things. But, Mr. Chairman, if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer those. Are you... Okay, the honorable lobbyist from the Municipal League has a friendly amendment that is somewhere in transit.
Okay, we'll just wait. Well, I mean, we'll keep going, but I'm sure you'll be on the way. Any further proponents to Senate Bill 13?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Yvonne Taylor with the South Dakota Municipal League. We just noticed a technical cleanup that we'd like to ask be taken care of on page 3 of the printed bill, line 17. Strike the words first or second class. And the reason for this is that some of our very, very small towns, which are third class, operate under the aldermanic form, and the same law should apply to them as it applies to the larger towns.
But that section isn't being changed. Those words aren't.
No, but we're asking for them to be deleted. And I believe that's a friendly amendment.
Yes.
And with that, I would be happy to stand by for questions.
Thank you. Further proponents, Senate Bill 13. Seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 13? Any opponents? Seeing none, I will open it up to questions regarding Senate Bill 13. Senator Bradford.
Secretary Nelson, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wondered how you could... In page 10, in that section 19, you completely eliminate the whole thing. Is there, I mean, are these people that you could totally eliminate the instruction process of the counting board and simply process as required?
If I might, Mr. Chairman, great question. There are two different ways that absentee ballots are processed in South Dakota. One is what I'd call the normal way, where absentee ballots are taken out to the polling place and the election workers out there process those ballots. The other option that some of our larger counties use is an absentee ballot counting board, where they keep the absentee ballots at the courthouse. They bring in special workers that process them right at the courthouse. This section 19 is the definition of how that absentee ballot counting board would operate so far as opening up and processing and evaluating those absentee ballots. As I read through that, I realize that the criteria that they are using is not identical to the criteria that's being used out at the polling place, which obviously isn't good. We want to make sure those ballots are being evaluated using the same criteria. And so we've eliminated this language and simply put in a cross-reference and said, you use the same criteria found in 12-19-10 as they are using out at the polling place. Were the differences significant? No, but in this area, particularly if we ever get into a statewide recount, I mean, we don't want any discrepancy between how things are handled.
Further questions? Mr. Secretary, I have a couple. On page 3, line 8, do you want to explain to the committee why year is not needed when signing the petition?
Certainly. Page 3, line 8, this particular section deals with county initiative and referendum petitions, and this change is being made to make this standard with the language used for all other statewide petitions. Right now, if you sign a statewide petition, you simply have to put your month and day of the date you sign it. Usually the year you sign it is not in question because they know what year you're circulating that. And so this is a change simply to make those petitions and their requirements the same as we have for statewide.
Senator Miles?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And also, while you're there,
mm-hmm.
on page 2, I noticed on Section 2 and in Section 3, water project districts were included where they admitted. Can you explain that a little bit?
Certainly. These two sections of law are in a chapter of law that deals with establishing special project-type districts, road districts, fire districts, water project districts, and it applies to the formation process for all of those. And to form all of those districts takes a majority vote. However, in the specific section of law, and it's over in Title 46 that talks about establishing a water project district, that section of law says to establish a water project district, it takes a 60% vote. And we had a situation in Lake County this last year where there was confusion between the specific statute in 46 that said take 60% and this general statute that says majority. Well, the specific statute takes precedence, and we don't want to change that, but because there were some folks over there that didn't bother looking far enough, there was that confusion. And so we want to make it very clear that this statute is not attempting to change what has been long established as a 60% requirement to form that type of district.
Thank you.
One other question, Mr. Secretary. On page 5, line 7 and 14, it talks about the active voter registration list. Could you maybe explain to the committee what an active voter registration list and what a
thank you. Yeah, good question. Under the National Voter Registration Act, prior to that act in 1993, if somebody didn't vote for 4 years, we put a notice in the newspaper, we sent them a card, and if they didn't respond, we purged them from the list. National Voter Registration Act said you can't do that anymore. So what we do is after 4 years, if you don't vote, we send you two different notices. And if they come back undeliverable, unresponded to, then instead of purging the person, they have to be moved to an inactive registration list. While they're on that list, if they show up to vote, they have to fill out a new voter registration card and then can be allowed to vote. If, on the other hand, another four years goes by and they don't show up, then they are completely removed from the list, and that's all provided in federal law. We have an existing statute that says anyone on the inactive registration list is not considered to be a registered voter. And when we went to court on the smoking ban petition, we took the position that that existing statute meant that they could not sign a petition because they are not considered to be registered voters. The judge took a different view and said, and her words were, Mr. Secretary, you probably know more about this than I do, but I think they ought to be able to sign the petition. And that was her ruling. And so what this is my attempt to very clearly, I mean, we've already got one statute on the books, but to very, very clearly specify that when the statute says qualified voters to sign petitions, that means just folks that are on that active registration list. Be happy to answer any other questions.
Senator Bradford?
This is just a statement. I'm wondering about mailing dates. In here, I see that all of them are, if they're mailed by a certain time, then they're legal. I guess this is just a discussion because in my case, when I mailed those recount applications, one of them was detained by a week and they were not allowed. So I just wondered why that.
If I might respond, dealing with election mailings, we use different language depending on what the issue is. In the case of a recount petition, and Senator Bradford had mailed a request for a recount, and in that part of the statute, it requires it to be received by the election official, by the county auditor, those local county auditors, by the deadline to request a recount. It's not based on the postmark. It's when, you know, they have to receive it by then. Now, we've got other areas, like when you file your nominating petitions, where it says if you send it by registered mail and you have it postmarked and registered by the deadline, then it's sufficient, even if the auditor gets it after the deadline. And so we handle those things differently. Do I have a hang up one way or the other on that? Not really. It's just that's the way the statutes have been written over time. I will follow up with one other thing. In the area of a recount request, though, we have a great interest in having pretty firm deadlines because we want to move that process along and find out who won and who lost without any undue delay. I do have an interest in that.
I have another question on page 8, lines 1 through 4. You talk about allowing the military servicemen and women to vote in a primary, general, other statewide election using this electronic format. Was there any consideration on school elections, city elections, other elections that they're still allowed to vote in, of course, but not allowed to receive it electronically?
The answer is no. There was not any serious consideration for a couple of reasons. First, the federal law requires us to provide this for federal elections, and that's why this is written that way. The electronic system that's going to be used to deliver these ballots or allow access to these ballots for the military and overseas is the ST25 system that we developed a year ago for candidate management and election night reporting. And that's a system that we operate for primary and general, and if we ever have a statewide special election, we would operate that system for that. That is not a system that cities and schools use for their elections. I mean, this is a management system for statewide elections. If a city and school chooses to combine their election with our primary, and a number of them do, and we really encourage that, then their candidates are going to be included on the primary ballot, and military and overseas would be able to access those for the primary election. They're going to vote on both primary and city and school candidates. And so there are some cities where they've chosen to do that combination. Their folks are going to have access to this. But where they're holding their standalone, you know, city or school election, they would not.
Last question, and maybe this is not that big of a deal, but on page 13, lines 2 and 3, talks about 60 days prior to the election and then that they must be filed 30 days prior. So that gives a 30-day window to get those petitions in. Is there a reason we only give school board 30 days for that, where, like, legislators and whatnot, we have 90 days? to get our petitions in.
I don't know that there's any magic to that other than that's the amount of time that school boards have always had, for normal school board elections. And of course, this applies to a new school board where they're doing a new district and, 30 days, is all they've had. They only need 20 signatures as opposed to most legislators need 50. And so, I think the thought process is within 30 days, that's ample time to get 20 signatures.
And that's the same as an existing school board.
Right, yeah. Or roughly the same.
The 30 days?
Yes. If you look at... on page 12... line 5 and 6 talks about the deadline for a regular school board petition being 39 days prior to, and then on line 15, it talks about you can start circulating 10 weeks before. So 70 days minus the 39, you're going to be 31 days. So 30, 31, right in the same ballpark.
Do you think we should have it the same?
I don't see any issue there.
Any further questions for the Secretary? Seeing none, Ms. Taylor, any news? No bill?
No
amendment?
Well, I would like to have an amendment prepared, but
Oh, we're not going to get paper? Okay. Please.
The amendment would read on page 3, line 17 of the printed bill, overstrike first or second class.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Amendment. Page 3, line 17, strike first or second class. Any discussion on that amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, nay. Seeing none, motion passes. All right. Any further discussion on Senate Bill 13 as amended? Then I would open it up for action.
I'll move to pass.
I have a do-pass motion, Senator Tizen.
Second,
Senator Bradford. Any further discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will call the roll on do-pass on Senate Bill 13.
Senator Gillespie. Klocek.
Aye.
Miles.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Tizen.
Aye.
Bradford.
Aye.
Gant.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there were 6 ayes.
Motion passes 6-0. Next up, we have Senate Bill 51, which is to permit the filing of certain documents with the Secretary of State by electronic means and to provide penalties for false filings. Proponents for Senate Bill 51.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Chris Nelson, Secretary of State. This bill deals with the filing of corporate annual reports, and typically these things end up over in the Judiciary Committee, which is why I asked Senator Abdullah to sponsor it. But I think they must be busy, and so they've sent it over here, and I'm happy to visit with you about it. You may remember a year ago we asked the legislature to allow us to keep $3 of each of the annual report filing fees to develop a system to electronically file corporate annual reports, and we are in the process of programming and designing that particular program. As we've looked at the statutes, we want to be very clear that there's no question about who can actually be the person filling out the report online on behalf of that corporation and actually submitting it. And we've got a statute an existing statute that talks about a person who is authorized to do that type of thing. It says the person who's authorized to execute the corporate annual report, but it doesn't define the term authorized, doesn't define the term execution of the document. And so what we've asked to do here, and this is all existing corporate law, but we've asked to add a definition of who is the authorized person, what do we mean when we talk about electronic means, What do we mean by execution? We're not talking about criminals here. We're talking about doing the actual filing. And then in sections two, we want to make it very clear that whoever the person is that is actually filing that has responsibility for making sure the information being filed is accurate. And then section three, just being very, very clear that there's no question that this can, in fact, be done electronically. I'd be happy to answer any questions when appropriate.
Thank you. Are there further proponents of Senate Bill 51? Further proponents? Seeing none, are there any opponents to Senate Bill 51? Any opponents? Seeing none, we'll open it up for committee questions on Senate Bill 51. Seeing none, I would open it up for committee action on Senate Bill 51. Senator Bradford?
I'll move to pass.
Second.
We have a motion by Senator Bradford, a second by Senator Teason to do pass. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, the secretary will call the roll. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed signify by saying nay.
Senator Gillespie, Klocek.
Aye.
Miles.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye.
Bradford.
Aye.
Gant.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, there are yeas 6.
Motion passes 6-0. Thank you. With that, we don't have any other business, so the chair would entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved and second to adjourn. All those in favor, did you get that, Senator Klocek, Senator Miles? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Motion passes.